This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, we start chapter 2 now, which is really the end of the creation. Vayichulu ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz v'chol tzvam. This is a well-known paragraph, of course. Yes. And the heavens and the earth and everything that was in them was completed, were completed. Vayichal Elokim b'yom ha-shvi'i melachto asher asa. And God finished on the seventh day the work which he did. Vayishbot b'yom ha-shvi'i mikol melachto asher asa. And he rested on the seventh day from all the work which he did. Vayevarech Elokim et yom ha-shvi'i, and God blessed the seventh day. Vayekadesh oto, and he sanctified it. Ki vo shavat mikol melachto, because on that day he rested from all his work. Asher bara Elokim la'asot, which God had created to do. Okay, what are our difficulties on this piece of Chumash? What are the difficulties?
If you were right when you said to me that there is no time in God's world, then how do you split it up in the second day? How do you rest at a particular point of time?
Okay, so the splitting up of the days that we discussed already, that he's talking about the way it appeared to us in these seven time periods, because we can only relate to things being done one after the other. And in fact, once we developed that whole evolution concept, we understood that that's in fact how it was, the one thing evolved out of the other. Okay, this is our world. What you're asking though is, what does it mean that God rests on the seventh day? There isn't time in God's world altogether. Yeah. But let's concentrate first at least on the textual difficulties. That's certainly a very strong philosophical question. On the textual difficulties, what are the textual difficulties over here? Shiri, you've been away a long time, you've got no excuse not to be on the ball.
Yeah, it's
not an excuse, it might be a reason. Why should God need to rest? Yes, that's a good, that's also a philosophical question, but it's a good one too.
Why should we say which God created in
doing? Right, very good. That's a textual question. You're starting at the end. What does it mean which God created? He rested from all the work which he created to do. What does all that mean? What else have we got? Not quite. There's a lot of repetition altogether which we should look at. It says the heaven and earth was finished on the first sentence. Then it says, and God finished all the work which he did, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work which he did, which again is repetition. In the second verse itself there's repetition. And then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because he rested on that day from all the work which he did, which he created to do. So there's a repetition three times. That's a question. That's an important day. Right, so that's an important, so there's a textual inaccuracy. It says, and he finished his work on the seventh day. What else is there? No vayihi ere vayivoker. Doesn't say it was evening and it was morning and that was the seventh day. Yeah, but still. It still has an evening and it has a morning. And it is the seventh day after all. Those are the main questions.
And that is the holy day.
Therefore? Yeah, sure it's different. You're answering why it doesn't say that it was evening and it was morning. You mean, are you asking or are you commenting? What are you doing?
I'm just commenting.
Yes, sure, it's a different day from any other day. We'll have to understand what that means, that he sanctified it. Sorry? Yes, it is the first time we have the word of Kedusha. The first time the concept of Kedusha is expressly referred to in the Torah, right?
How do you bless a day?
And how do you bless a day? Right. Amazing how we rattle this thing off every Friday night. No problems. You drink your wine, you sit down, you start the Shabbat. Because a fish is an object, the day isn't. The day is a unit of time, and as Cecil pointed out before you came in, I think, that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't relate this to units of time. They're not objects as far as he's concerned, they're artificial. These are the problems. And why should one day be intrinsically more special than other days? What was the cause of making of being Mekadosh this day? These are the questions that one has. Now the purpose of saying it at Kiddush, by the way, is to think about all these things. Because we'll find in this little paragraph amazing things. Number one, we're going to find the purpose of creation, believe it or not. Number two, the meaning of Shabbos. That's what that means, and that's why we start our Kiddush off with this little paragraph. It's a declaration of the purpose of the creation, and it's the meaning of Shabbos, the role that Shabbos plays in our lives, and it's the basis for all the laws of Shabbos. Okay. Can you believe it? Doesn't look like it, does it? But it's sure all is here. Let's look at it. You know, there's a differences between the Hasidim and the old Lithuanian style of Yiddishkeit, and the differences I've spoken to you about several times, that one of the areas is the brilliance of the creation of Hasidus, or the brilliance particularly at that time, but it served its purpose throughout times even today, was its ability to convey the excitement of Torah even to people who didn't understand the Torah. That was the brilliance of Hasidus. It never caught on in Lithuania. And it never caught on in Lithuania for a couple of reasons, but one of the reasons were that it wasn't necessary. Because there are only two ways to become excited with the Torah. The one is directly emotionally, and the other is intellectually. Now the Hasidim at the time criticized the Lithuanian Jews of being totally unemotional and over-academic. What they didn't fully appreciate is the extent of excitement that can be reached through the intellect. So there are two ways you can approach making Kiddush on Friday night. You can approach it mystically, and then you should dim the lights if that were possible on Shabbos, or in any case you should leave your electric lights off altogether and create the right kind of atmosphere, and you take your Kiddush cup and you think all sorts of holy thoughts and all sorts of wonderful things, and that has the ability and the sufficient symbolic richness in Yiddishkeit, and particularly in something like Kiddush, to enable one to feel that directly, particularly if one has some kind of a natural mystical feel for it. But if you don't, you can become equally excited, if not a great deal more excited, by simply understanding what you're doing. That's all. If you would just understand while you're saying Vayechulu Hashamayim V'Haaretz V'Chol Tzevaom what you're saying, there is nothing more exciting in your whole week. It's not possible to achieve such heights of understanding and of declaration and of ambition what you're going to do over the next 24 hours as you're saying this, and it's all declared in this Vayechulu, and the meaning of the week that's just gone by. If you would understand how full it is of meaning at the time that you're saying it, therein would lie your total spiritual satisfaction. And that's what the Lithuanian method was, of reaching excitement through the intellect. It wasn't the saying that the excitement is not important, or the emotional feeling for Yiddishkeit is not important. The purpose of it was that you can reach that same emotional satisfaction through understanding what you're doing, through studying what you're doing. That's all. But everything in Yiddishkeit needs a study. Whether it's your Kiddush on Friday night, or it's your benching after the meal, or it's the meaning of the meal itself, the laws of the meal. There are two ways. Either it's mystical, in which case, sure, well, the more you know, the better it is, but it's possible to become excited and to enjoy it even without knowledge. And the other way is the long way, and that's you've got to understand what you're doing. But if you really understand what you're doing and you're conscious about it while you're doing it, that's the difficult thing. And that's an area where the Lithuanian Jews at times did fall down. While they were studying the Chumash like we're doing, they got all excited about what it means. So when it came to Kiddush on Friday night, they still said, one has to be able to learn the concept and be conscious enough and self-disciplined enough to employ that understanding and to direct that understanding at the time that you're actually making Kiddush. So let's have a look at it now. Yeah. It can be a combination of both, but it's not necessary to be a combination of both. The emotional, sure, but the emotional comes through the intellectual this way. So just a question of how you reach that emotion. Do you reach the emotion through a mystical approach, or do you reach the emotion through the intellectual approach? But that emotion has to be reached. Not necessarily, you see, then there comes a difference. Then you start looking at the dim light as hocus pocus. Right, then you get the cynical Lithuanian, which is also no good. The cynical Lithuanian who looks at it all and he says, you know, this is all nonsense, it's a bit hocus pocus. This is the real thing, all the light thing. Right? No, they don't. This is the way they get the emotion. You'll see in a moment how you get the emotion. Then there does, even the Lithuanian Jew acknowledges the importance of the mystical dimension, but that also through learning. So when he knows this dimension, he'll start learning Kabbalah. And as he learns more and more and more and more, his understanding and appreciation of what he's doing just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The problem with that is it's a long process, and people who are not up to it intellectually can't do it. And that's why that was the big criticism, and a valid criticism against Lithuanian Judaism, was the extent to which it left out people who weren't up to it. It was an elitist religion. It is an elitist religion. And whereas when things are going well, those who can't keep up with it keep up by virtue of their association with those who can, and you find people becoming friends. So you'll have an Amma Oretz, you'll have a simple person who can't understand all this kind of thing, or thinks he can't, or hasn't had the opportunity, but he'll support a Ben Torah. So he'll sit at the Ben Torah's table on Friday night, and the Ben Torah will explain it to him. That was the way it was envisaged in Lithuania, that the contact would be established between those who could and those who couldn't. Not that they would be excluded, but that there's only one way, and that's through learning or through being associated with somebody who is learning. But there's no shortcut. The fact is that in other areas of Europe, the learning had fallen very far behind, and the Jews were at a stage of complete emotional sterility. They had absolutely no emotional feeling. They didn't understand what they were doing. They did it nevertheless. They had no mystical appreciation for what they were doing. And what the Baal Shem Tov did in his time was save the vast majority of Jews, who would otherwise probably just have disappeared and disintegrated. But today those times are over, and we have developed before us two clear approaches. Now, you can't approach or reach the emotion simultaneously by two conflicting methods. The purpose is the same, the ideal is the same, the method is opposite. The Hasidic method is rather to employ sort of emotional moods to bring the emotion on directly. Right, to create an emotional mood into which you immediately fit and you feel it from your environment. To create an environment which is charged with the emotion, and the environment is created by people who understand. So you'll have the leadership creating an environment and saying, now you go inside there and you'll feel it. And it's true, it works. The Lithuanian way is, look, I'm not going to create an environment for you. You learn and make your own environment. That's the difference. And one has to understand the differences. I always say there would be no conflict between groups of people if they understood each other. That's all you need to do. You just have to understand the validity of the other approach, to understand that each one has validity and therefore there's no need for conflict. You can appreciate or prefer approach A or approach B. It makes no difference. But one has to understand what each approach is and the validity of each approach. Now let's see what we mean when we say Vayechilu Hashem. Vayechulu Hashemayim v'ha'aretz v'chol tzva'am, and the heaven and the earth and everything that was in them were completed. How does it translate it in English? In the passive form or the active form? He completed it or they were completed? They were finished. Why does it say they were finished and not he finished them? Right, because it was an evolutionary process. It finished itself. God wasn't doing anything since the first day except directing. He designed, he organized the whole thing, but then he stood back and the whole thing evolved in itself. And on Shabbos what happened was, the heaven and earth and everything that was in them became complete. By Yechulah doesn't just mean that it was finished. Does it say completed or finished?
Finished.
Well, finished is not right. The correct word is complete. And Unculus, in fact, translates it as the Ishtachlalu, which means they became sophisticated. And the Targum Yonatan translates it, I don't have it before me, but you probably have it there.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does he translate it? Ushlimu, they were perfected. So there you've got
first and the destiny of the completion.
And?
And then the destiny completion.
Not a bad compromise between the whole lot of them. So you've got Vayechulu, which means they were completed. Ishtachlalu, the Unculus, which means they were sophisticated. Or perfected. A perfected is more like the Targum Yonatan, that they were perfected on the seventh day. But they did it themselves, right? It was a passive thing. After God effected the initial creation, then Vayechulu Hashemayim v'haretz v'chol tzvaim, the heaven and the earth and all their hosts, or whatever they translate them as, were completed, did become perfect, right? The Chol Tzva'am actually means "and all their host," not hosts. Again, how's it translated in English? They leave it singular. That's very good of them, but it's bad English.
The host of them.
Well, that's all even worse English.
The host.
Even worse English. Why is it in the singular? And it's correct. It's correct that it's in the singular, but it doesn't make much sense. Why does it say the host singular of the heaven and the earth? What is a host? Well, the Hebrew is the tzava, which really means army. In other words, the more than the complement, even the serving bodies. That's not bad at all. Yeah, the serving bodies. Why is it in the singular? Who's got an idea on that? No. It might be in English, but certainly not in Hebrew.
But it's one complete unit, the heaven and the earth and everything.
Their army. That's what it says. Their army. And their army. Sorry? Oh, it's got one army. The important thing is that heaven and earth have one army. Have one tzava, whatever you want to call it over here. The tzava is the thing which connects, which carries the thing out. Really, it's the connection between the spiritual and the physical. So the tzava is one, and that tzava belongs to both heaven and to earth. You know, you've got a link between two things. Where does the link belong? On the A side or the B side? It's both of those links, and that's what the tzava is. Sorry?
The tzava is
God. No, the tzava are the mystical units which were created, which are probably the astronomical systems and the angels and all sorts of things, all that is between Shamayim and Aris, in the chain of reaction that goes from Shamayim to Aris, that's called the Tavan. It works both ways. God can dangle the chain at one end and it affects us over here, and we can dangle the chain over here and it affects God, and that's the Tavan. But it's one Tavan. Right. Vayechal Elokim bayom hashvi'i melachto asher asa. And God finished on the seventh day the work which he did. Vayishbot bayom hashvi'i mikol melachto asher asa. And he finished and he stopped on the seventh day all the work which he did. That's repetitious. Okay, that's the first question. The second question is a question that we've already raised, but it appears as if God actually worked on the seventh day. Okay, and that's the first Rashi we'll look at. Have you got the Rashi on the Pasuk Bet down at the bottom? Verse 2. It starts by Echal Elokim Bayom Hashvi. Everybody got it? Rabbi Shimon Omer. Rabbi Shimon explains it this way. Basar Vadam She'eno Yodea Itav Uregov. A human being who cannot be precise about his times and his moments, tzarich lahosif michol al hakodesh, he has to take Shabbos in earlier than Shabbos actually comes in, because you can't be that precise to leave it till the last minute, because you don't know exactly when that last minute is. So by us there's a clear division between the weekday and Shabbos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheyodea itav uragav, but God, who knows his moments perfectly, nichnas bo kechut ha-sara, can go up to Shabbos, up to a hair's breadth of working on Shabbos. V'nireh ki'ilu kala bo b'yom, and it appears to us as if he's finished on Shabbos itself. Sometimes you see a person who's driving to shul a half a moment before Shabbos comes in, and that's no good, because it appears to anybody who's looking as if it's Shabbos already. Imagine that he could be so precise that he knew exactly when Shabbos was coming in, and he knew that he would make it to shul in time. Even then, it's no good because of what it appears like. It looks as if he's driving on Shabbos. That means the impression, if you're that fine with taking in Shabbos, the impression is that you're actually working on Shabbos itself. And what the Torah is giving us here is our impression of when God stopped working. It looked as if God worked actually into the seventh day, but the time period stopped before that. We're not going to spend much time on that view. We're going to do the second view of Rashi, Davar Acher, another view. Ma haya ha'olam chaser. What was the world lacking up till the end of the sixth day? Answers Rashi, Menucha, rest. The one thing which hadn't been created was rest. Sure, there were many other things that hadn't been created, surely. Houses hadn't been created, and aeroplanes hadn't been created.
That would,
that would have evolved, but rest would never have evolved. That's the important thing. Inherent in the Bria, that's very good, Alan. Inherent in the Bria was continuous, perpetual work. The concept of stopping work did not exist in the Bria, did not exist in the creation. Why are you laughing? You can't imagine we're living in such a world. Bo Shabbos, bo Menucha. Came Shabbos, came Menucha. Rest was introduced into the world when Shabbos was introduced in the world. In other words, there was a creation on the seventh day. On the seventh day, God created Menucha, he created rest. That's what Rashi is saying. Kalta v'nigmara ha-melocha. At that point, the work, the melocha, was finished and completed. In other words, until rest was created, the work was not considered complete. There are two ways that we can understand this, and both of them are correct. The first way is the importance of understanding what the Torah considers menucha, what the Torah considers rest. There's nothing passive about it. Not a time to sit back and take things easy. And we don't have such a time. I always say, if you want to sit back and take things easy, or perhaps more accurately, if you want to lie back and take things easy, there's only one place to do it, and that's out at West Park. That's the only place where there are no tzoros, where there are no worries, where there's no pressure of work, where there are no hardships. You can lie there peacefully, and you have nothing to worry about. Everything is done for you. You're taken from one place to another, you're carried, you're put down nicely, you're covered, you're knocked into a box, they cover you up, you're made comfy, and all the rest of it, and then you have peace forever. That's the only place that if you want peace, that's where you can get it. So if anybody craves for peace and quiet, they should be very careful, and they certainly shouldn't pray for it. If you pray for peace and quiet, you're praying for death. In the world that God created here, in this world that we're living in, there is no peace and quiet. And if you experience peace and quiet, you're experiencing a deathliness. But there is a strange relationship between physical peace and spiritual effort. And this is what Shabbos is all about, and what we're going to examine a little bit more carefully. But before we come to that, let's just understand, therefore, that the concept of menucha, the concept of rest, is not one of passivity. It's not one of stopping what you're doing. It's one of working even harder. Because it actually had to be created. If rest was just stopping, then there would be no creation on the seventh day. So when we say on Friday night, Vayechal Elokim bayom hashvi'i melachto asher asa, that he finished his work on the seventh day, what we're saying is on the seventh day he created relaxation and recreation. And that means it's a positive force, recreation. It has to be used actively, not passively. How does one use it actively, not passively? By the way, this is becoming an increasing problem in the world. With increased leisure time, one finds increased contrary to all expectations of works of psychology through many ages, where psychologists wrote about those idyllic days that will come one day when there will be more leisure time for man. And those days have arrived. There's more leisure time. And there's more psychological illness than there's ever been before. Man wasn't created for leisure, not for one moment of leisure. What is important, though, is to understand how to use one's quote and unquote leisure time. What is one's leisure time? Leisure time should be regarded as time where you're freed from chores, that's all. You don't have to do things that you have no choice about doing. You have to do other things. Leisure time is a time where you can choose how you want to spend that time. Leisure time is a period that you can decide how you want to be active, but it's not a time where you don't have to be active. During the week you have no choice, you've got to get up at a certain time because davening starts at a certain time. When davening's finished, you've got to go and have breakfast. When you've had breakfast, you've got to go and work. And when you finish work, you've got to come home for Mincha and Maariv. When you've done Mincha and Maariv, you've got to go home for supper. And when you finish supper, you've got to sit down and learn. And when you finish learning, you're tired and you've got to sleep. That's how the weekday goes. There's no time for self-directed use of time. That's all predetermined. That's how it's going to work. And people who claim that the Torah stifles spontaneity and all this kind of thing are talking such rubbish. Because the only day that you can have spontaneity is Shabbos. And that the Torah gives us. Nobody has spontaneity during the week. It's a farce. They persuade themselves they have spontaneity by wearing crazy clothes and by doing crazy things whenever they can grab a moment, and they think that's their spontaneity. There's nothing spontaneous about that. That's a desperate effort of some miserable people to pretend that they're being spontaneous. Because the weekdays don't allow for spontaneity. The world as it's been created, the world as it operates, is what doesn't allow for spontaneity. The hippie movement was not a movement against the Torah. Was a movement against the Western world. And where are the hippies now? Doing exactly what their fathers were doing when they were busy rebelling. They've understood probably that, you know, it's not ideal and it's not all that wonderful and all the rest of it, but the toughness, the fact is that the world, the way the world operates, you don't have that much time to do what you want and to be spontaneous and self-expression. It's all predetermined. And interpersonal behavior is predetermined. Politeness, manners. These are all things which are not completely artificial and have just been imposed by some idiot sitting in England. This is the way people are forced to relate to one another if they're going to get a job of work done. If you're going to act spontaneously with your colleagues, and you're going to get angry when you feel like getting angry, and you're going to slap them on the back when you feel like slapping them on the back, and punch them in the nose when you feel like punching them in the nose, nothing's going to get done. There'll be total chaos in the world. So it's inherent in the world that there have to be certain norms of interpersonal behavior to which everybody has to subscribe. So you'll say it makes you uniform, and it does away with personality, and it does away with uniqueness and with originality. Sure it does, except for Shabbos. Shabbos is the day we're going to see that Shabbos affects the whole week. So what's important to see here is that it's the Torah that gives the possibilities for spontaneity, at least one day a week. Whereas in any other society, you don't even have that. So, menucha is a period where you can express your individuality by deciding how to spend your time. And what do most people do? Come Shabbos, sleep. Isn't that incredible? That's the expression of individuality. At last you've got a chance. There's no pressure on you at all. The phone won't ring. The newspaper doesn't have to be read. You don't have to go to work. All you have to do is go to davening in the morning, go to davening in the afternoon, and the rest of the day is yours. So what do you do? That's it. No, nobody would do that. And there you've got the people who are craving for an opportunity to express their personality are given the opportunity, and they all do the same thing in the most predictable fashion. It's unbelievable, therefore, how insincere this desire for self-expression really is. Because if it costs you a bit of effort, you won't do it. What people want is the ability to express themselves as an escape, as a means of getting out of other norms, and free. They want it for nothing. But if it's going to cost a bit of effort, it's like Maharishi Shiva always used to say, it wasn't his, it's been said for many, many years, for many generations. He used to stand and tell us, he used to say, always before Rosh Hashanah, he used to say that. He used to say, whoever here wants to become a god of the Torah, who wants to become great in Torah? And everybody puts up their hand. And he used to give us a whole talk of what it means to become a god of the Torah, and the effort that's involved in becoming a god of the Torah, and how few make it, and that it's a long, hard slog, and maybe better you drop out now than be disappointed later in your life, and the whole story. And eventually he used to say to us, you know the trouble with you is, I believe you that you all sincerely want to become a god of the Torah. Not only that, you're all so ambitious you want to become a god of the Torah in one day. Overnight you want to become god of the Torah. That's wonderful. But you want to sleep that night as well. And that's the problem. The self-expression is something we want. The uniqueness is something we want, but not if it costs. So we're given a Shabbos, but Shabbos, we're tired. Let's have the self-expression some other time. It doesn't work that way. There's a price for everything. And the price for Shabbos is hard work. But that's what it is. It's a time where we can choose at what to work. Where our environment doesn't dictate to us at what to work. That's what Shabbos is.
But actually, Shabbos can have self-expression and play music. You can't.
We'll come to that. We'll come to what you can't do and why you can't do it. Right. Have you ever seen a kettle shoot its lid off? When does it happen? Why does it burst? You shut the spout. Okay, remember that. You want self-expression, you've got to shut the spout. But we'll do that in a moment too. It is. It is. We'll see in a moment what self-expression is. Well, who else should tell me what self-expression is except the guy who created me? If I'm going to rely on, I would rather rely on him than rely on myself. I'd certainly rather rely on him than rely on anybody else. Yeah, sure, it tells you what's up. Sorry? You've already got an argument with it. I know you, alright. The other angle to what Rashi has just said, and this is actually more accurate in the words of Rashi. Leisure does something else to you as well. I'll tell you what it does. Let's imagine that Chas v'Shalom, we're living in a concentration camp. Right? Born there and living there all our lives. And they're working us like anything, inhumanly, and there's no time to do anything. Comes after 120 years, we come up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we say to him, and he says to us, did you learn Torah? The Ribbono Shel Olam in a concentration camp? Okay, fair enough. Did you daven 3 times a day? Ribbono Shel Olam, they used to take us out before sunrise and we used to come back after sunset. When daven? Okay. And so he goes through the list. That'll be okay, we would be excused. But imagine that one day before we leave, before we die, he takes us out of the concentration camp. Leaving aside the natural fatigue and all that kind of thing. Imagine for one day before we die, he takes us out. And then we come out to him after 120 years and one day. And he says to us, did you learn? Banish for them, concentration camp. What's his answer going to be? Concentration camp 120 years. But what about that one day I gave you? The fact that you didn't learn on your free day shows that you wouldn't have learned during 120 years in any case. That's why I gave you the free day, to see what you would have done had you had the opportunity. Now do you know why I put you in a concentration camp? Okay, tefillin. Tefillin, oh, when did we put on tefillin? And the last day you had, who was pressurizing you then? That shows that you would never have put on tefillin. What leisure does is, it tells you who you really are. Because on the day when you've got no outside pressures, it tells you what you would do if you had no outside pressures. For some people, sleep. Some people play bowls. Some people learn. Some people spend the time with their families. Whatever it is. But if you want to know a person, just creep into his house on Shabbos and have a look around. And you'll know what the person really is. Sure, time to sleep on Shabbos too. One's got a bit of relaxation. One's meant to enjoy Shabbos too. You take an hour shlof in the afternoon. Nothing wrong with that. But it all depends on what you're doing during the week as well. If you're learning hard during the week and keeping all the mitzvahs during the week, come Shabbos, you take it easy. If you're not, if you're crying that you're unable to do things during the week because of the pressures that the Ribbono Shel Olam has put you into, that's fine, the Ribbono Shel Olam will accept that. But Shabbos is going to decide the value of your whole week retrospectively. You can't claim that you had no time if when you did have time, you didn't utilize the time either. The Shabbos becomes a test. Not just Shabbos, but leisure time in general. It becomes a test as to what you really consider worthwhile. How you would spend time if you had the choices to how to spend time. That's what Shabbos becomes. In other words, if you look carefully at the words of Rashi, at the last few words, Bo'o menucho, comes rest, kalta v'nigmaro hamalacho, then the work is completed. Until you've rested, your work is not completed because you haven't given value to your work. You haven't shown what it's all for, what you're working towards. You know, People go into school and they work to get their matrix. Comes their matrix and it's over. Now you've got your matric, what do you do? When I'm out of the army, that's when I'll start doing what I really want to do. I know what I want to do. Come out of the army, then you're going to see me operating. I know where I want to get. I'm an ambitious fellow. So then you work for 2 years to get to that day at the end of the army. Comes the end of the army, it's just like it used to be before. I don't have a university degree. I don't have a university degree. If I would have a university degree, I'll make it in this world. I'm going to get a university degree, and you start studying, you get your BA and your MA and all the other A's. Finished with that, you're still a nothing. It's because I'm not married. I'll get married, then things are going to be different. So you get married. Comes, you get married and they're children, you've got to work very hard to keep things going. Then you know what it becomes. Retirement. That will be the day when I'll start doing what I want to do. I know what I want to do. And I'm just going to work to make the money, and then you'll see me do what I'm going to do. And when comes retirement, and there's a complete letdown, and a complete crisis of identity, and a complete anticlimax, and the person patiently waits to die. Now that's the tragedy of human life. What you want to do isn't tomorrow. What you want to do and what you want to become is today, or latest, Shabbos. That's the last day, it's the seventh day of the week. The next time starts another week. You can't leave anything beyond Shabbos. You've got 6 days to do what has to be done. You've got 6 days to do what the world forces you to do. And then you've got Shabbos to make all that into something worthwhile. But if you've let your Shabbos go, that's goodbye to last week. So you can start again this week. But don't look further forward than Shabbos. Shabbos is going to determine the value of your whole last 6 days. And that's what Rashi means here. Kalta benigmara hamalocha. When leisure comes, when menucha comes, the work is completed. And until then, the work is not completed because it's meaningless. What are you working for? Working and working and working for retirement. That's not what it's all for. If comes Shabbos and you spend your Shabbos on personal growth, if you spend your Shabbos on development and on individual development and development of your family and your friends, then you can say, that's what I'm working for. That's what it's all for. And if I had more time, that's what I would do with my time. And believe me, if that's what we would do with our Shabbos, the Ribbono Shel Olam would give us more time during the week. That's it. That's what he's testing us to see. How do we use time? Before he gives us too much time, more time than we know with what to do with, he wants to see how we handle it on a limited basis. We would handle Shabbos properly, there would be more time during the week as well. Yeah, in South Africa it's doubly severe because we've got 2 days a week. So if we waste a Sunday as well, then it's really bad. So that's what it means. Vayechal Elokim b'yom ha-shvi'i, on the seventh day God finished melachto asher asa, the work which he made, which means the work which he made on the seventh day, which is the creation of the of menucha, of rest. And the pasuk goes on to tell us what he created. He created vayishbot b'yom ha-shvi'i mikol melachto asher asa. His creation was the fact that he didn't work on the seventh day. That's what he did. That was his creation. Now the strange thing is that the way the Torah relates it, it seems passive. It doesn't tell us what God did do. It doesn't say he sat and learned Torah for the seventh day. How did God spend his seventh day? It doesn't say he spent it with anybody, he wasn't doing anything. So now we've developed a whole fine theory of how important it is to be active in your leisure time, but according to the Torah, God was passive in his leisure time. But here you see another important concept in leisure. If you're rearing to go, if you're bursting at the seams, when you pull off the cork, you don't have to do anything active. It does it itself. If the pressure of a need to have time to yourself starts on Sunday, and you start working as to what you're going to do, and your mind starts operating, every free moment you're thinking, and all you need is a few hours to sit down and put it all together, and Monday it gets worse, and Tuesday still worse, and Wednesday still worse, comes Friday, you don't have to do anything active. It'll all work itself. The moment Shabbos comes and you've got time, what you're going to do? Go to sleep. If your mind has been occupied and if you've been under this tension, and tension is not something harmful to human beings, don't listen to the doctors, it's not true. Frustration is harmful. Aggravation is harmful. But tension is vital. And all these efforts that they're trying to use, whether medical or psychological or anything else, to reduce tension, spell doom for mankind if they could see. There's nothing wrong with tension. Nobody died from tension. People died from frustration, aggravation, heartache. But not from tension. You try and make music with a violin where there's no tension in the strings. Doesn't sound too good. You try and make music with a human being who doesn't have tension. You're only operating at your peak when you're at tension. And Shabbos and the weekday creates a tension which builds up starting Sunday, and that tension builds and builds and builds. Come Shabbos, the tension moves out itself. You really may be passive. Your body can certainly be passive. You don't have to start running around like a meshugim on Shabbos. Your mind will automatically blossom out. And you'll start conceiving of things that you didn't have time to conceive of. All the groundwork you did at your odd moments during the week, an hour here, 2 hours there, you sat at a shul, you listened, you were sitting in a bus and you thought, you made a note on a scrap of paper, all that operation during the week, which is created under, which is performed under circumstances of tension, blossoms forth on Shabbos. The most amazing thing of what one can conceive and what one can understand on a Shabbos. Any Talmud Chacham will tell you that Shabbos is his most creative day. There are mystical reasons for that, there are reasons in Kabbalah, but there's the simple philosophic reason which I've just told you. Shabbos is the day for creativity, provided you've been exploding for it, provided you've been waiting for it. What you have to avoid is, we'll come back to that. And God blessed the seventh day and he sanctified it. Let's start with the last one first. Kedusha. Kedusha means withdraw, strangely enough. The ultimate in Kedusha is achieved through withdrawal from the world, in a sense. God is the ultimate in holiness and he's withdrawn from the world. The more separate you are from material things, the more kedusha you can achieve. That doesn't sound like what I normally say, does it?
Yeah.
You noticed? Okay, we'll come to it. But the important thing to understand is that it depends who you are. As we said on Shabbos, you're quite right. If you are a Ribbono Shel Olam, or you are an angel, then the way you'll achieve that kedusha is by separating yourself completely. Then any contact with the world is in fact a contamination. But if you're made from the world, then disassociating yourself from the world will induce abnormality. And this is another tension that the human being finds himself in. The one tension we've just discussed is the tension between force of circumstance and desire for self-expression. Now that's a major tension that a human being is under. Everybody knows it themselves, but we only say to myself, I know myself, I'm going to take a week's holiday and I'll plan it for months in advance, and what I'm going to learn in that week, and what shiurim I'm going to prepare in that week. Comes the end of the week and I haven't learned or prepared as much as I do in 2 hours under pressure. That's how it is. Take away that tension and you can't be as creative as you are normally. So the first tension is the tension created by the conflict between force of circumstance on the one hand and desire for self-expression on the other hand. The second one is the need to reach sanctity, which means disassociating yourself from the world, and the need to retain normality, which means associating yourself with the world. You want to be a normal holy person, not an abnormal holy person or a normal profane person. You want to be normal and holy. And the big problem that people in the street have with Orthodox Yiddishkeit is, you can't be normal and keep Shabbos, or you can't be normal and be a Frum Jew. That's the big problem. If they picture it as abnormal, and unfortunately one can hardly blame them, because a tremendous proportion of people who get involved in the sanctity of Yiddishkeit do so at the expense of their normality, and that's not required by the Torah. In fact, it's abhorred by the Torah. One has to constantly walk that tightrope between normality pulling in the one direction and Kedusha pulling in the other direction. A human being has a desire, has a sort of a subconscious pull which is very strong if he's involved in anything spiritual, to become a hippie. It's an amazing thing. Every Ben Torah has a pull to become a hippie. Give it all up, lock myself up in a little room somewhere, or go to some desert island and eat berries and sit alone. Who needs it? So you won't have nice clothes, so you won't have a motor car, so you won't have all the other status symbols that there are. Who needs it? There's an incredible pull towards that. And the moment one takes a step towards that, there's a pull back to normality. That's not normal. The Kedusha of Shabbos lies in the fact that on Shabbos we are disassociated from the world. Shabbat is the day that enables us to fulfill our hippie instinct, because we become hippies on Shabbat. Just what we do. We leave the world. We leave the world of normality. And it doesn't matter for that one day in 7 days, because we don't have to operate in the world. Now, to leave a man who's abnormal in contact with the world is dangerous. To leave a man who's in a situation of abnormality and say, look, it doesn't matter, you can be abnormal and you can go to work, that's dangerous, because he's going to make a mess of his work. Or he's going to make a mess of his kedusha. Because the two, in their ultimate forms, can't operate together. Imagine saying to our friend in the White House, why don't you keep Shabbos? So you'll still be the president, you keep Shabbos. If there's any crisis, they'll come and tell you on Shabbos. Can't do that. Because he's going to lose touch with the world a little bit during that Shabbos. And if he has to take a critical decision during Shabbos, it might well be the wrong decision. What will you say then? He should be careful not to do such a thing. He should retain contact with the world. He should keep his two legs on the ground during Shabbos. But then he won't get the Shabbos atmosphere. One day a week we leave the world. One day a week we take a little leap. And we protect ourselves and the world by saying, okay, you'll take that leap, but during that time you won't have contact with the world either. You'll enter into this controlled environment where you're protected from the world and the world is protected from you, which is just as important. The world will just have to run itself for one day. You're not in a fit state to run the world, and the world is not in a fit state, or you're not in a fit state to be affected by the world. You can't affect the world, you can't be affected by the world. And that's what Shabbos is. A day where we don't affect the world, and where the world isn't allowed to affect us. A day where we're on our own, absolutely on that desert island. And this is the way we solve this hippie instinct. So now you see that it's Shabbos itself, which is the core of our frustration. Right? On the one hand, it's Shabbos versus the weekdays in the sense of force of circumstance versus self-expression. On the other hand, it's Shabbos versus the weekdays in the sense of normality versus Kedusha. And this tension that we experience during the 6 days. And during the 6 days, the highest form of Kedusha we can reach is the balancing act, which is a very great form of Kedusha. In a sense, it's much higher than the angels. In a sense, it's even higher than Shabbos to be able to do the balancing act. But Shabbos, we can relax from the balancing act. Comes the problem, okay, so you're going to leave the world alone for a day of Shabbos. And how's the world going to run? What's going to happen during that day? Look at Rashi. Verse Gimel. Vayavarech, vayakadesh. What does it mean that he blessed and he sanctified? Birecho b'man. He blessed it with the mon. Right, you remember the story of the mon. Shekol yemot ha-shavua yarad lahem omer lagul golet. During the 6 days of the week, during the 5 days of the week, one omer came down per head. Uveshishi, and on Friday, lechem mishneh. Double came down. That's how God solves the problem. He builds into the bria the ability to work twice as hard on Friday as to tide it over Shabbos. That's what it is, yeah? The women know it, no? That's how it is. That's what Friday is. Friday is a day that we work twice as hard, the creation works twice as hard, God, so to say, works twice as hard. Everything's operating in double performance on Friday, so it can tide itself over for Shabbos. That's what it is. The Kiddush or the man, and how does he sanctify it? With the mon. Shelo yarat klal b'Shabbos. It doesn't come down at all on Shabbos. V'hamikra kosu v'ha'osid, and the Torah is talking about the future. Now, a lot of people criticize Rashi and say, surely the Torah can't be talking about such a narrow thing as the one circumstance of the 40 years during which the mon fell. Surely, we're talking here about universal concepts. Surely that's not what it means, but that's what Rashi means as well. Rashi also isn't talking only about the mon. Rashi is using the mon as an example of how the world operates. The mon gives us a peep into how the world of income works, how the world of economy works. The world of economy is such that you don't lose a penny by closing on Shabbos. You get it? You cannot lose anything by closing on Shabbos. And it can work on two ways. Either you'll find that this was tried and tested, believe you me, by many people who were in businesses that they were told could not possibly survive if they weren't working on Shabbos. The one method is that your income actually increases during the 6 days of the week, which happens very often. The other is that your expenses are reduced. The Ribbono Shel Olam has many ways, unfortunately, of adjusting your income. You can adjust it by how much you have in it, and we foolish human beings judge our income by our income. We don't look at our expenses. And we don't realize that by not working on Shabbos, the Ribbono Shel Olam might cut down other bills, repair bills, change of clothes, your clothing might last a little bit longer, medical bills, all sorts of things that are outflows. But if you add it up in the end, you'll find that it's impossible that a man keeps Shabbos for the right reason and suffers one penny loss because of it. It can't be. It's just not possible. The way the world is created is before Vayakadosh, before God sanctified the seventh day, Vayavarech, He blessed it before He sanctified it. He would never do that. To ask us to withdraw from the world in a way which would be detrimental for us or the world, He would never do that. First He blesses the world to make sure that the world can survive the Kedusha. Having done so, Vayavarech Elokim es Yom HaShvi, having blessed the seventh day, that means that the seventh day can ride along. It can manage. Vayakadosh Esau, Ribbono Shel Olam then sanctifies it and says, okay, now that we can manage keeping away for the seventh day, we can sanctify the seventh day and we can say you don't do any work. Kivo Shavat Mikom Lasot, because on that day he rested from all his work, Asher Bara Elokim Lasot, which God created to do. Why created to do? He created that on Shabbos it should carry on doing it itself. That's what it is. And here we have the essence of the laws of Shabbos. You're not allowed to make anything new on Shabbos, but your evolution is permitted. That's why you can set a time clock on Friday. So you can do whatever you want on Friday that will carry on working on Shabbos, but you can't make anything on Shabbos, nothing new on Shabbos, because making something new means you're affecting the environment, and you're banned from affecting the environment because you're in no condition to affect the environment, and you're banned from being influenced by the environment. So the only thing that's allowed on Shabbos are things which have started during the weekday, and that's how it all makes up. The economy carries on, and you know, one can buy a Krugerrand on Friday for $600, and one can sell it on Monday for $800. You know, so that, was one working on Shabbos or not? You weren't working. The Krugerrand was working for you. That can be done. That's in order. So the Ribbono Shel Olam builds into the Bria its ability to carry on operating during the Shabbos, but in a way that you don't have to worry about it. And that's what's important about all the dinim of Shabbos. If one now looks at the laws of Shabbos, you'll see that it has nothing to do with strain of work. We're not worried about hard work. You can take a heavy oak table and you can carry it backwards and forwards the whole of Shabbos. We're not worried about working on Shabbos. Shabbos has got nothing to do with work. What Shabbos has got to do with is affecting the environment. You can't make anything new. That's for two reasons. Firstly, the reason we've already given, and that is that you're in no fit state to make any new things, and if you are going to make new things, it's going to detract from your Kedusha, because you're going to have to devote so much attention to it, it's going to detract from your Kedusha. But there's another thing too, and that's the kettle theory. The self-expression, the form of any form of self-expression is creativity. One wants to be creative. Now there are various levels of being creative, but let's take two levels. The one level is technologically creative, to be creative in an engineering sense, to make something material that is new. The other is to be creative spiritually, to create a new concept. What's the difference? If you create something materially new, when that creation is over, it's over. Right? You've done it. Makes no difference what you've made. You've made a piece of table out of some pieces of wood. The table's there. It's finished. It doesn't give you anything except the table. It doesn't give you subjectively in the future anything you didn't have before. Whereas if you create something spiritually or intellectually, it's something which gives you something for the rest of your life. For example, if I say to you, if you put money in the building society, and at the end of a year of the money being in the building society says, we're going to give you another 100 rand. You've had 1,000 rand with us for a year, we're giving you 100 rand. That's only 100 rand they've given you, nothing more than that. But if the building society tells you, when you put the money in, this is going to appreciate at 10% per annum, that's something which stays with you forever, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger as you're going on. The one's a quantitative addition and the one's a qualitative addition. The one's an arithmetic addition and the one's a geometric addition. And the geometric addition is something which changes the quality of your money, so to say. Your money is not just 1,000 rand, it's 1,000 rand at 10%. That's a different kind of money to 1,000 rand. And it's not 1,000 rand plus the promise of 100 rand at the end of the year, because that's 1,100 rand. And this isn't 1,100 rand. This is 1,000 rand at 10%. It's a different quality of money. When one makes things material, yeah, it's creativity, it's self-expression, but it's not something that you live with for the rest of your life. When you make something spiritual, that's something you live with for the rest of your life. And if we would allow Shereed Dinner to play music on Shabbos, that's all she would do. Because that's very important. I'm not talking about Shereed Dinner, but anybody who's talented in music. That's the naturally the most easiest form of... that's the easiest form of self-expression, because that's the area in which you're talented. But say, okay, so you sit down and you compose your fifth symphony. Wonderful, it's a tremendous contribution to the world, but Shabbos is not a day for contribution to the world. You've got 6 days to contribute to the world. Shabbos is a day to lay off the world. So let's not worry about the contribution. What does the sixth symphony or the fifth symphony do to Beethoven? Nothing. It lets out a lot of pent-up energy. In fact, he's deflated when it's finished. The excitement was writing it. The excitement was doing it. But once it's over, it's finished. There's nothing left. Not so spiritual creativity. If you've understood a Rashi, if you've understood this little paragraph of Vayechulu, just imagine that you sat down on Shabbos and this is what you would have done. This is something that changes your life. This is something that changes every future Shabbos. It changes every future Sunday to Friday. If you now put this into practice, if you revise this, and every time you go over Vayechulu, you remember it word for word as we go through what you're actually saying, and you translate it from intellect into emotion, you get excited about it, and you live this way, and you do it, it's something which changes your whole life from now on and ever. So we have to plug the spout to make sure the lid comes off, because the tendency is to self-express oneself in a material sense. Human beings are naturally material. It's the easiest way of doing things. It's the way that appears to be the most fulfilling, but it's not the most fulfilling, it's the most short-lived. It's intense while it lasts, but it's short-lived. This is intense while it lasts, and it's not short-lived, this is permanent. And we're here not to give the world a gift. We're here to do something for ourselves.
Perhaps playing, working out that piece, and that feeling of...
You can work it out on Shabbos, but you can't put it into writing, and you can't play it on the machine. That's exactly the point. Working out is something that's going to thrill you. Putting it down is something that's going to thrill other people. Shabbos is not a time for other people, it's a time for you.
They're playing tape. If I play anything tape that you're learning for a concert in order to learn.
Passive. Can't be passive. You've got to be active.
But I am learning when I play the tape, and yet I'm not allowed to play a tape.
No, you've got to be active. A tape is one, that's one of my big objections to tapes altogether. Spoon feeding.
Yes, but it will help me understand.
I know it will help. A crutch helps an old man also.
Well, it's better than hop-hopping.
Depends. If by hop-hopping he'll finally land up without his crutch, then it's not better.
No.
Right, do you agree?
If he won't,
if he's so far gone that he won't, then it's better that he does. If you're talking about an old man who's in hospital, and if he doesn't hear the tape never, he's going to die, he's allowed to hear the tape. But anybody who's still alive and not about to die has hope.
I'm just about to die at any moment. I'm quite resigned. I don't look forward to it, but I'm...
As long as there are no symptoms, shall we say, you're in a state of eternal hope, and therefore what you can achieve on a Shabbos is no less than what anybody else can achieve on a Shabbos, and we don't give you any crutches. Sorry.
No crutches.
That's a compliment. You should take that as a compliment, obviously. Some people we give crutches.
But you've got no idea how the temptation is to play the
crutches. That's the Vayechulu. Are there any questions left on it? Do you see now what I mean? And it gives us an understanding of the purpose of creation, the purpose of Shabbos, and the purpose of the 6 days. And it's actually the Shabbos, the way you spend your Shabbos, that will dictate the purpose of your 6 days. It's you who actually decide the purpose of your 6 days. But that's what a Shabbos is. And unless you're burning up to attention before Shabbos comes, you know, that when you come in for Kiddush, you've got to feel exhausted. But it's the most amazing thing to come in from shul after shul, you make Kiddush and you sit down to supper. When you finish supper, if you've had a good week, you are finished. Is anybody who hasn't had this experience? You're absolutely dead. That's why you can't learn your learning. But try this next Friday night. When Shabbos is when the meal is finished, decide to yourself that you're going to spend 2 hours doing something. Get up from the meal and go for a walk around the block, and you'll come back with incredible energy. You can't believe what energy you'll come back with. The temptation, of course, is to flop into bed. That's our ideal of self-expression. But try it. It's the most amazing thing. It's just the fact you have to kick yourself out of that sort of idea that Friday night is bedtime, and decide that you're going to spend an hour, half an hour. Try for the first time, it's less frightening, half an hour. You're going to read a good book, or you're going to go over the Sedra, or you're going to learn two lines of Gemara, or you'll go over this Fayechulu, whatever you want, for half an hour. But after Sapa, get up and take a walk around the block and come back and sit down. And you'll see what I mean when I said that Shabbos is a time for creativity. Ah, no, I didn't, thank you. So, Vayihi Erev Vayihi Boker, we'll come to that in a moment, it sort of now becomes a simple reason. Vayihi Boker is to teach the distinction in atmosphere between night and daytime. Remember we discussed that, what Erev means and what Boker means. And Shabbos is no distinction. Have you noticed that? The glaring contradiction between night and day doesn't exist on Shabbos. Day is a time for effort and work, and night is a time for relaxation and withdrawal during the week. But Shabbos, it's the same rakshas. Night time, day time, slightly different atmospheres, but the basic concept of night and day doesn't apply to Shabbos. Shabbos is a 24-hour long day. That's what it is. We don't need a night time on Shabbos. Well, to some it's a 24-hour long night, never. Depends how you handle it. Well, now Shabbos becomes, we've explained what Vayavarech means. Vayavarech is he blessed the world to produce sufficient for that day on Friday. Right?
Also, the atmosphere that one is in on Shabbos is important.
You've got to create the atmosphere then. That's the challenge of Shabbos, is to create that. You're right, you're so right. And that's why one has to control where one is on Shabbos and create where one is on the Shabbos. Very, very hard.
So what did God do
when
he did
that? So the Ribbono Shel Olam, like we as we said, that when the tension builds up during the 6 days and your mind at every spare moment is occupied, in other words, you've got a fortune of creativity bubbling around all the time, but it's covered up by the 6-day work obligation. When you remove the 6-day, you explode into work. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam was doing.